You're listening to Extra Time Radio.
David Goss is in my house. I will not let him sit on the furniture.
No.
He's sitting on the floor right now. Yeah. He doesn't get to have a chair anymore.
That's what I'm willing to do.
Hat trick for Deuce. Two hat tricks in four games.
Are you watching the games? Are you just looking at the stats? Modge Podge.
Hodgepodge?
Hodgepodge.
Modge Podge.
Yeah, there's a Modge Podge. Whole Modge Podge of rumors.
This is a transfer Modge Podge.
It is an ungodly mess.
Yeah. I'm just trying to think about what I want to say.
That's why he's here!
Oh, from New York, New York, you are listening to Extra Time Radio on SiriusXM FC, Channel 85 at MLSsoccer.com. I am Andrew Wiebe, back in the saddle again with my guys, David Goss, Matt the Armchair Analyst, Doyle out there in the octagon.
All the ETR diehards just
perked up in their seat.
Andrew's back.
I haven't listened to the other episodes that I was gone for because I fully expected you guys just to rip me mercilessly for whatever.
That's so pure of you.
Yeah, for whatever reason. And I didn't want our relationship to be affected. I wanted to make sure that just stayed in the dark where it belongs. So
I wanted it to.
I'm glad to be back. We have a big show for you today. Carlos Bocanegra, the technical director of Atlanta United FC, will join us in the second segment. If you've been living under an MLS rock, you don't know that Gerardo Tata Martino is the new head coach for Atlanta United. So he will be the first ever head coach for that team. We will talk to Carlos about that decision, as well as how things are going for him, because, of course, they have to stock that roster ahead of 2017. We'll also talk playoffs, supporters shield. There is some more Clint Dempsey news and is not necessarily positive.
Big CCL talk as well.
Yes, some big CCL talk. Pescarito got the start for FC Dallas midweek. It was a scoreless draw, so, you know, our dreams were not realized in that sense.
He missed a sitter.
Oh, no.
It was bad.
Ruiz, come on, man. I need more from you than that. But first, let's talk about some midweek action. And there's some news here, guys, because a certain Seattle Sounders team got a certain ugly 1-0 result at home against a certain not-so-good Chicago Fire team, and they're now above the red line. They are above the red line with three games remaining. A Sounders team that someone who shall not be named said had a 0% chance, of making the playoffs, are above Portland. I mean, it's got to be alarm bell time for the Timbers. I mean, this is crazy. Dave, I watched this game, and I'm listening to them talk about this, and oh, they're now in the playoffs. They have three games left to do it. They're in a good position, and they have a game in hand. I mean, this is nuts.
I don't think they were ecstatic about the way it was played out, but it's midweek soccer. It's late in the season. You're playing Chicago Fire.
Is that a new tag phrase?
Midweek soccer. Yeah. When you watch a lot of these games, it should be, because it's literally just survive and move on. It's not pretty a lot of the time. They played fine. I thought they had good moments in the first half. The second half, they had almost no attack. Jordan Morris had one could have been good chance where he got around Campbell but couldn't really get his angle right. Also only has one foot still.
Yeah.
Used the left foot last weekend, but then he returned it to whatever store he rented it from. But it doesn't matter because the results all that mattered. Like you said, they have the game in hand still. It's good to see that if you play poorly, you can still get the win and that can help you get to the playoffs. But there is an element watching them last night of you kind of thought maybe Dempsey was going to be around the corner and there'd be an even bigger boost to what Lodeiro's given. And now that's not coming and you don't know if they have enough bullets to really be a threat. But
That's the news I referenced. And it's not negative because Clint Dempsey is doing what's right for his body and his family. He will not play again for the Sounders in 2016. And by extension, I expect that probably also means the U.S. national team. We haven't heard, I don't think for sure, on that one. But he says there's a possibility he could come back for 2017. So we'll monitor that story very, very closely. The Sounders the rest of the way at Vancouver this weekend versus Houston, at FC Dallas against Real Salt Lake. So that's not the easiest schedule, but they have that extra opportunity.
There's a guy on their roster named Nelson Valdez. Now would be a good time to join MLS.
He had snake bit, man. I feel bad for him.
I think there was one where Lodeiro ripped across the face of goal. That was basically a shot. And in my head, I was like, what are you doing? And 2 minutes later, I was like, he probably is thinking, I have to hit this off of Valdez to get in the goal.
Just
because Valdez
his foot
is not
him
putting
knowing.
It in himself.
Yeah, it's tough. He got in a bunch of good positions last night. Had pretty good play. It actually wasn't bad from him, but just couldn't get
if
it
done. He was a college draft pick, last night it would have been like Valdez had a good night.
Yeah,
seriously.
Sure. Portland, Matt, we'll talk about them. They got a good result thanks to a Darlington Nagbe free kick in the CONCACAF Champions League, and now they're in position to move on in that competition. But now they're underneath the red line, and they got to be pretty worried. I mean, if you're Caleb Porter, you watched this game, you turned off the TV, you poured a stiff drink, and you thought what?
I think that they're in trouble. But not only because they got the great result in midweek Champions League action, but Fernando Adi got an inexplicable red card, or yellow card rather, and is now suspended for the final game of CCL. So they have to beat Saprissa without Fernando Adi, and they have to go. Two of their next three are on the road. They're winless on the road this year. Portland's in trouble. And it doesn't feel like last year when they kind of pulled out of a funk and had everything clicking and then went on to that great run to the title. This team has not been able to find answers, and they don't look like they're all that much closer than they were 4 months ago.
At Colorado, versus Colorado, at Vancouver, a tough one for the Timbers.
Versus? Yeah, versus in a song.
I'm not really that picky about that. That's
Matt and his friends on Twitter are.
Oh, really? Well, that's okay.
Let's make this point that Portland are winless on the road. Colorado, meanwhile, are the last unbeaten home team in MLS this year. So in perfect MLS fashion, we know that Portland is going to go to Commerce City and get like a 4-0 win. Yeah. Because that's just the most MLS thing that could happen.
Exactly. You know what we should do, though? We're going to call Ben Bear because we have got to take him to task for that 0%. I mean, I've been reamed for Wando, who scored this weekend. Doyle's been reamed for NYCFC. It's time
all
to
my,
ream a little
all
research.
All of my
bear.
Picks are correct.
Yeah. Dial him up. Dial him up.
Hello?
Hey, Ben the Research Bear. Is that you?
That is me.
That is you. We are here live on Extra Time Radio, and we want to ask you a quick question, Ben. What is up with that 0% on the Seattle Sounders playoff chances? How you feeling, buddy?
Did they clinch playoffs yet?
They have not yet clinched the playoffs. That's a really good point that you just made, but I don't know. They're above the red line. They got a game in hand. Is there any nervousness on your end about that prediction, especially? I'm pretty sure, Dave, didn't he pile on Doyle a little bit for that NYCFC one?
Oh, he absolutely did.
Definitely did. Always did. How you feeling?
I'm feeling good. I mean, they haven't clinched yet, so, you know, I'll call me when they clinch.
Are you still guaranteeing?
Are you still holding on to that 0%?
Are you waiting for the Portland
0%.
Away wins?
I said 0%, so 0%.
0%. Okay. We thought we were going to get a rise out of Ben the Researcher. Thank you for your time, Ben.
My pleasure, guys.
You know, I thought we were going to get more of a hot take, more of a, you know, Ben the Research Bear coming in just angry about
a lot
that
of people
call.
Here don't know Ben very well. He's very measured, very relaxed, never really rises to bait. So that's him in a nutshell.
Yeah. Look, I mean, he's right. They haven't clinched a playoff spot yet. They haven't clinched one yet, but they've got some opportunities. One big issue for them this weekend at Vancouver, and we'll talk about that game just a little bit more later. Nicholas Lodero is suspended. Yellow
is that
card
guy
suspension.
Good?
He's decent. He's all right. He's one that they want to have on the field to win games. But let's move on. We'll talk about CCL at the end of the segment because there are some knockout round implications going down with seeding, with teams getting in, that sort of good stuff. But there is more midweek action. As well, I mentioned that Wando go. Well, Montreal, who we've been ragging on for a while because they just haven't been playing very well, and Didier Drogba hasn't been doing much either. They win 3-1 against San Jose, who it really looks like their playoff chances are basically gone. I don't think anybody's technically eliminated on math just yet, but in spirit, there are a number of teams that are basically eliminated.
Chicago's eliminated on math.
Okay.
They're
that's
the only
one. That's the one. And Chicago, as we know, lost to Seattle. DC with a 3-0 victory against Columbus. Lloyd Sam with a goal that you definitely want to go watch from this one. Patty Mullins. Gotta love it. I heard you guys had a good interview with him, so I'll go check that one out. I'll just skip all the ragtime at the beginning of the episode.
Ragtime.
Yeah, Toronto FC, 0. Orlando, 0. And this one, look, it's a point for Toronto, and they'll take it. They would have wanted 3. Orlando kind of in that spirit zone as well.
No, it's a problem. Yeah. Toronto hasn't won their last 3 home games. They did the whole, we have a great road record, now we're going to come home and clinch it. And they're not that good at home.
Ooh.
They're playing without their two most creative players. Everybody knows Giovinco. And there aren't a lot of teams in this league that can afford to be without their best player, and that's what Giovinco is. But Jay Chapman was really, really good this summer.
I knew you were going to do that. I knew you were going
Jay
Chapman.
In that number 10 role. And Jonathan Osorio has not been as good. They are 1-1-3 when Osorio plays as the number 10. He doesn't have the vision for it. They don't create chances when he's out there. And there aren't a lot of teams in this league that can be without their two most creative attackers.
And this wasn't – I mean, they had more chances in the first half. I think
they also had a red card, by the way.
Well, they outshot Orlando 11-2 in the first half. The red card came in the 70th minute.
Yeah.
But they weren't high-percentage chances. They were all Josie finally getting to turn in the box and trying to get a shot away. That was really all that they were
creating. There is a little bit of – not panic in Toronto, but I did see some voices out there saying, hey, this team is just average without Giovinco. They need him back for the playoff run. I think everybody can see that. Let's talk about the weekend because it matters, and the red line is forever in play for the rest of the year here. That's what we'll be focusing on. Who's above it? Who's below it? What's the seeding look like? What are the matchups in the playoffs? You go to MLSsoccer.com. You got everything you could possibly need there, Supporter Shield standings, the live standings, the playoff picture, the results map to check out the form of all these teams. Head on over there to do that. On Friday, you can also watch the Dynamo against NYCFC. That's at 8 p.m. Viernes de Football on Unimas. David Horst did not exactly have kind words for Owen Coyle's time in Houston. He says they've been a lot more tactically coherent. I use the word coherent. He basically said that under Wade Barrett. And now, Mauro Manotas is scoring goals. And we knew this guy had talent, but he never really got the time. And you could say that for a lot of strikers that aren't named Will Bruin or Giles Barnes in Houston. Wade Barrett, Doyle, does he have a chance to keep this job?
He should keep this job. The Dynamo Brain Trust will be making a big mistake if they go for the, you know, the fancy signing instead of the guy who has proven over the course of 4 or 5 months now that he can take a team that was really sinking and get it to play better soccer, to get it to play entertaining soccer. I know this is shocking to people, but the Dynamo have actually been a lot of fun to watch over the last month and a half, and get the young guys like Mauro Manotas to start reaching their potential. I think it's a huge mistake if they don't give Wade Barrett the job.
We will see what happens there in the offseason. That will be a big decision for the Dynamo. You can watch that game, as I said, Unimas, 8 p.m. on Friday night. Houston, pretty much in that spirit category. NYCFC maybe going to jump into the 1 or 2 seed in the East. I think right now they're very safe in having a home game in that knockout round, at the very least, at Yankee Stadium, although that hasn't always been a huge positive for them this season. The Red Bulls start things off on Saturday night. They're trying to push for that top spot in the East as well, just a point like NYCFC behind Toronto FC. They'll play Philadelphia Union at 7 p.m. Eastern on MLS Live Saturday night. Red Bulls, blow leads, that's kind of what they've done of late. Philly have been fading a little bit as well. It hasn't, I mean, look, a bogus non-call on Josie Altidore in the box, in my opinion, saved them a point against Toronto FC. Oh, you're on the other side?
Oh, my God.
Anyway.
Spare me.
I think we'd basically said on this show that they were going to have a home game at the very, very least. Well, now, 31 games played, they've got 42 points. Montreal's got 41 from 31. DC's got 40 from 31. There's a possibility that they'll be on the road in that knockout round. What's happened to the Union, Dave? And don't ever bring up the Josie Altidore call again.
They don't score goals. We mentioned a little bit in that Sapong getting called or not getting called for that foul against Josie. Either way, he's not scoring goals. This team's not scoring goals. No one up top's really carrying the team. Pontius started hot. He's cooled off. Herbers has been good in build-up, but isn't a finisher himself. El Cino, Tranquilo Barneta. No one's really scoring goals right now. That's the issue for the team. The last few games haven't been game. I mean, the last two games were on the road at Toronto and at Portland.
Mm-hmm.
So maybe they're not games you'd expect them to win. But before that, their recent, they had a game against Chicago that you would have expected them to win. So I wouldn't say the sky is falling, because I'm not sure that they're terrible results to go on the road and lose at Portland and to tie at Toronto, mm-hmm. but they need to turn it around down the stretch. I would agree with starting, I think, New York this game. New York coming off a CCL midweek game is a winnable game on the road, and they've won at Red Bull Arena in their history.
Yep, at Red Bull Arena, 7 p.m. Saturday on MLS Live. They need a win here. They still got a great opportunity to get a home game. I think if they get a home game in the knockout round and win it, done and dusted, that's a successful season, no matter what happens in the next round for the Philadelphia Union this year. That's just my opinion. 7:30 p.m., Columbus and Chicago, MLS Live. Columbus trying to stay alive some way, somehow. Chicago, the math is not with them. Will Trapp, though, maybe on his way back here, and that's good news for U.S. national team fans and everybody who likes a good long ball and good midfield play in this league. 7:30 p.m. as well as TFC and DC United. This is a matchup that could have some real playoff implications there. Both these teams currently above the red line, one at the top of the East, one at the bottom of the East. You can watch it on TSN in Canada, MLS Live here. DC, a draw would be good, Doyle. No, that's a fine result for them at this point. I'm looking at the table here, and I'm not sure who below them can actually catch them. I mean, New England are hot and cold. Orlando City are fading. DC United in the playoffs? Do you feel safe saying that? I know that there's still three games left. They could choke it out, but...
And I'm not safe. I don't feel safe saying it just yet because I do think that Orlando City, of all teams, has... maybe the most manageable schedule. And actually, New England's schedule is pretty manageable as well. Two home games and at Chicago. So there are still teams that can catch DC. That said, you mentioned him before, Patrick Mullen, since he entered the lineup, when he starts, they've scored 26 goals in 10 games. In the other 21 games, they've scored 20. So they are just beating teams to death attacking-wise. And obviously it's not just Mullins. It's Patrick Nyarko as well as playing, I think, the best soccer of his career. And Taylor Kempf and Lamar Nagel looks completely revitalized over the last 3 or 4 months. That's a good team. They can go on the road and they could trouble a Toronto team that has, at times, really, really struggled against high pressure. And that's what DC's doing these days.
Going into this weekend, New England's still alive. If DC wins this game, I think it's over. If New England fails to win, I think it is as well. But right now, New England still has a chance because of, like Doyle mentioned, that schedule.
Yeah, a lot to play for there. 7:30 p.m. Eastern, TSN MLS Live. At 9 p.m. Saturday on MLS Live is Colorado-Portland. This ought to be a really, really good one. We kind of talked about it. Bizarro MLS World means that Portland will go to the Rapids and win at altitude. We will see what happens. Here's the more bizarro MLS thing from this season. We had Ben Baer to talk about, the draws and the propensity for shares in this league this year. Colorado have won 4 games in 4 months, and they control the supporter shield race. How much sense does that make? It doesn't make a whole lot, but if they win out, this thing is theirs. Like, they've got 5 games left, which is, I think, more than anybody else other than the Dynamo in MLS, but it all comes in a quick succession. Do you go for the shield? Do you go for that? Or do you, knowing that you're basically locked into a home game, although you're not locked into one or two, how do you manage the rest of the season, Dave? I guess if you're Pablo, based on the fact that you're going to go right into the playoffs,
yeah,
no matter what, do you save some legs? What do you do?
If it comes down to moments like, obviously Jermaine Jones is the one that they could potentially rush back, or even risking Tim Howard.
Can you rush Jermaine Jones back?
No. But I'm just saying moments like that, and I was talking to someone with Toronto like that, with Javinko, I don't think it's worth it to go for the supporter shield. I also don't think there's that big a difference between first and second if you don't win the supporter shield, because you're guaranteeing yourself that first round bye, and then after that, everyone gets a home game. They're two-legged affairs. So it's first leg or second leg has value. Obviously, hosting the second leg means going into a potential extra time. You have more minutes at home, which has been good and bad for teams. But, I don't think you take that risk if that's what it comes down to. But Colorado's not that old a team.
No.
So a lot of their guys, it's not like Marlon Hairston or Dominic Baggi or Axel Hooberg should really – have the inability to play midweek.
Also, we also don't know if they're dealing with injuries. It is the end of the season. Those niggling things do come along. But right now, Colorado on 48 points, LA on 48 points, LA with 2 additional games played. So if you're Colorado and you can get 4 points, 3 points, even 2 points from these 2 games in between, if you can create that buffer zone, that's what you want, because you definitely want to skip the knockout round. That's
also, just little Portland, we'll talk about CCL, but Portland played a pretty strong team.
Yeah.
Basically a starting back line except for Vitas. Basically
down
a starting
in
midfield, Zemanski, or I don't know if Zemanski is part of that starting midfield right now, which is bad news if he is. So they're going to be tired.
Yeah, they should be. Dallas, LA keeps things rolling as well at 9 p.m. Eastern, also on MLS Live. Dallas in, I would say, comfortable position should Colorado trip up. 53 points from 31 games. They're chasing the double right now. L.A., big news here, Giovanni Dos Santos called up to the Mexican national team for this October set of friendlies against New Zealand and Panama. It's a little bit of a hodgepodge roster there.
But it's a roster he has to be a part of, because if that type of roster is put together without him, that shows how far behind he is.
Yeah, 100%.
And it's the type of names of the guys that he's competing with to make the team.
I have a note here, Doyle, that I believe you must have put. L.A., 2-11 since Bruce Arena called me a moron. Is that, I'm assuming that's you?
That's correct. That's some analytics right there.
That is some good analytics. What are you looking at for L.A. right now? He also said, I believe today, that that Keane and Giovanni do not occupy the same spaces on the field. If you're Bruce Arena, if you're the L.A. Galaxy, what do you need to get done over the last three games, Matt?
I think they just have to figure out what their best 11 is and how to play it. I think it was crystal clear earlier this year that that included Jossy Zardes, and obviously he's not coming back anytime soon. They have to scrape by. They have to make do with what they have. If Bruce says that Keane and Dos Santos are complementary players, then, you know, he is the one to figure out how to show it, and perhaps it will start this weekend at Dallas.
Who knows? 9 p.m. Eastern, MLS Live, a very big game. Two very good teams at the top of the Western Conference. A possible preview to the MLS Cup playoffs. Finishing the night off, 10:30 p.m. Eastern on MLS Live. San Jose and RSL. San Jose staggering along at this point. RSL need to get some more goals from a guy named Yura. 9 goals this year, 3 assists. That's probably not enough for them to invest next year for the amount of money that you'd think it would cost to transfer him over from Russia, but we will see.
You weren't here last week, but we interviewed Jordan Morris. He then scored 2 goals this weekend.
Ooh.
Then we had Patrick Mullinsall on. Did not score. Actually missed a little bit of a sitter, but team
that
still
won.
Little
bit of, that was a complete sitter.
Well, I was trying to be friendly because he was so nice to me. But okay, thanks, Doyle. and so we mentioned, does anyone need any help? And most of the response we got was from RSL. So we are here for RSL. If
we
you believe, then just stand up on your feet.
Right.
So hopefully they get a victory this weekend.
Okay. Well, Dave's rooting for RSL, apparently, singing the song. On Sunday, Soccer Sunday, always a good time. Orlando, Montreal, huge implications here. Orlando need 3 points in the worst way. Montreal trying to move up and down in the Eastern Conference, although they're starting to look pretty good. We will talk about Didier Drogba in the mailbags. We'll hold off on that one, but you can watch this game at 1 p.m. Eastern on ESPN on Sunday. If you're up in Canada, TVA Sports is your destination there. The night will end with a little Cascadia, as well as the weekend, I believe. Vancouver, Seattle, 8 p.m. Eastern, FS1 and TSN2. The Caps, well, they had a decent September. It could have been worse for the Caps, although we had kind of talked them out of here. Kendall Watson got a red, so he's now, what, his 3rd red card of the season? That's tied for the lead record. So, you know, sorry, Kendall.
That's the type of season he's had.
Yeah, you're kind of living up to that one. Sounders.
We all picked him as Defender of the Year entering the season.
Did we?
I don't think I did. I think I picked Simon to win it again, so that was just as bad a pick.
Yeah. We'll go back and look at those picks later. But you can watch that game at 8 p.m. Eastern on FS1 and TSN if you want to check that one out. A lot at stake, as we talked about with the Sounders. Let's talk really quickly, Dave, about CCL. Red Bulls, they got through to the quarterfinals. They had a 0-0 road draw. That'll get the job done. And in the region, Portland, as we said, came from behind. Nagby Baby with a nice free kick in this one. Dallas, Ruiz missing apparently a sitter that I'm glad I missed because I would have cried. 0-0 on that one. Then Vancouver, they've handled business all CCL long. 4-1 win against Central. So they win the group. They got +8 goal differential. Take us through these scenarios, Dave. What could be possible for MLS in the knockout rounds
next
spring?
So you've got one more match day left. There's different games for you to be watching. Obviously, for the MLS teams, Portland has to beat Saprissa at home. That has great potential for it. If they do end up, they can't end up tied anymore. So that's fine. Portland has to beat Saprissa at home. FC Dallas has to do something to knock off Suchitepeques in Guatemala.
Well played there.
Thank you. We already went over
well
that
played.
One. Most likely, if they tie but score goals, they'll go through on away goal differential between the top two teams. And if they win, they'll go through. If they lose, they're out. So let's say those two teams qualify with the way that we expect, Portland winning, FC Dallas getting any sort of result. Pachuca needs to win at Olympia for MLS to feel good. Basically, the way it works is if Pachuca wins their last game, they move to first place. They'd host FC Dallas, but you'd have one side of the bracket. That's Arabe Unido from Panama versus New York Red Bulls and Portland versus Vancouver in a Cascadian matchup with those winners facing off in a semifinal. 3 of 4 MLS teams on one side of the bracket, also avoiding a Mexican team. 3 Mexican teams on the other side knocking each other out. So that's an ideal world.
Or FC Dallas running
which
just
is
awesome. Running the game on that side of the bracket.
FC Dallas would
through.
Have to beat Pachuca, and then they'd have to beat the winner of Tigres versus Pumas.
No big deal.
No big deal at all, I guess. So that's what you're looking for. You're rooting for Pachuca to win at Olimpia and Tigres to beat Herediano. If Tigres loses at home to Herediano, Herediano passes them and becomes the lowest qualifier. They move into eighth place, moving everyone up one,
right.
Which isn't actually a good thing for MLS. It doesn't matter what your seeding is. It matters who you're matched up against.
Right.
And right now, MLS is matched up very cleanly. And I think if you're an MLS neutral fan or whatever, you want to see an MLS team win this competition, that's the best scenario.
Interesting stuff. A great breakdown there from Dave. We're going to go to the break. When we come back, Carlos Bocanegra, all about Tata Martino, the newest, well, the first head coach in Atlanta United FC history.
Fans, we want to hear from you. You're encouraged to email extratime at mlssoccer.com or tweet at extratime radio with any comments, questions, or reactions.
Well, it's the M.I. Trigger letter. Ain't no one better. And when I'm on the microphone, you best to wear your sweater because I'm cooler than a polar bear's toenail.
Back now at Extra Time Radio with the guys, David Goss, Matt the Armchair Analyst Doyle. I am Andrew Wiebe. We are playing Outcast for a very specific reason, and that's because we finally know who Atlanta United FC's head coach will be for 2017. The first ever head coach in the history of this expansion franchise. Gerardo Tata Martino, you probably know him from Argentina, from Barca, from Paraguay. He's coached in World Cups, Copa Americas, the Champions League, all over the place in Atlanta United.
Don't forget my beloved Copa Lib.
Yeah, that's true. Atlanta United snatched up the 53-year-old. He just had left Argentina after that disappointing runner-up finish in Copa America Centenario. Now he is in MLS. They flew down to Rosario, apparently, to meet with him, did all these things. We'll talk to Carlos Bocanegra, the technical director there in Atlanta, in just 1 second about this decision. But this is big, and it's big because, oh, his profile, what it means, but also because he basically gets to spark what I think could be one of the most ambitious franchises in Major League Soccer. And Doyle, I look at this, and my first thought was, A, I bet they spent a lot of money. But B, this feels like a DP signing in coaching terms, and we know that that doesn't always work out. What is your thoughts on Tata to Atlanta? Where is this going?
I kind of have the same perspective on it that you do. I mean, obviously, they've done better than anybody expected with regards to their ticket sales and their profile. I mean, they might end up challenging the Sounders in terms of attendance, which is... I don't think anybody thought that when Atlanta was announced as a team. And that gave them some flexibility to go out and get a guy like this. And Tata Martino has, a pretty good record. You know, I mean, people look at Argentina's second place finishes the last 2 years as a failure. But if you know, Higuain doesn't choke, and let's face it, he choked, they win back-to-back Copa America titles. So this is a guy who I think does check a lot of boxes, but he's going to be held to the same standard as every coach in the league. You don't have Lionel Messi with this team. You don't, you know, you're not even going to have prime Roque Santa Cruz, which is who we had with Paraguay back in the day. You're going to have to win based upon getting the most out of the talent that you have, and that will include some slightly older players, that'll include some very, very young players, that'll include guys who are taken off the scrap heap. I mean, if you want to compare it, like what Patrick Vieira has done with guys like Tommy McNamara and RJ Allen. I mean, Tommy McNamara was 3 clubs in 3 years. RJ Allen was basically a semi-professional player before Jason Christ got him last year and put him into the lineup, and I think he's improved this year. So MLS is a weird league. It's a different type of animal, and you don't have the same type of talent that you can just toss onto the field like you did with Argentina, Paraguay, and Barcelona, of course.
Now, not the same type of talent, but certainly this team, I think, will be talented. Just one DP spot filled. Hector Villalaba, we think that Andres Guardado is a possibility. You figure Arthur Blank will put down the money to get two high-profile DPs in those other two spots.
Well, he put down the money to get a coach.
He did. We don't know how much money.
But we know it's a sign that they're serious.
This is ambition.
But this is also because they have this coach and because they have the built-in audience that they seem to already have, they don't have to go out and get a 35-year-old Premier League star.
They don't.
Just to say, hey, we're here. They can say, you know what, we're going to zero in on the next Mauro Diaz. We are gonna find Bobby and Castillo. We're going to get guys like that, guys who will help on the field and make sure that the product is really good and then maybe have sell-on value.
Forget all that, Doyle. Messi for ATL. That's where this is going. Before we get to Carlos, Dave, the ambition, sure, first team. But do you see a top-to-bottom effect here? I mean, he's coming into a brand-new scenario for him. Yeah, he was in Atlanta this summer for Copa America Centenario, but Tata Martino is not going to be a guy who comes in and who's intimate with all the different, strange things that go through MLS. Is also the culture here. How does he adapt to that? Do you think he's the guy to help lead them in as far as linking the academy to the first team?
I think he is because he's a name that young players and families will respect. We talk about that with Oscar Pereja, going into these families' homes and saying, our club wants to bring your player in, to bring your kid in and have him be a part of this. He's a name that everyone will know because of Barcelona, because of Argentina. He's also a guy who has experience playing young players. He's a guy who has experience being around the youth development. So I think in all of those elements, it's going to be something that he values, which I think is going to be something that you can see from outside the club.
Argentina had the oldest team at the Copa America for each of the last 2 years.
Yeah, but it's not like he has a choice there.
Yes, he does. He's the coach. He gets to choose the lineup and the
roster. Whoa, let's not go down the road with Brazil and Argentina rosters and who's choosing the players on the field. There were not many guys that he couldn't bring of that team.
How was Barcelona's youth development when Martino was the coach there?
Well, he was there for a year.
Did he play the kids?
He played the kids at Newell's. He played the kids for Paraguay. He may not do it all the time, every single day. But I think he's someone who has value in that, who's someone who sees that. He also was the one who was supposed to be putting together Argentina's Olympic team before, I don't know, the Argentinian FA melted down from the inside. But I think there's that he will have some value there. It is something that he is willing to do, rather than maybe a guy who comes over from AC Milan who's like, I'm just going to play Andre Pirlo every single game.
Well, let's go to Carlos Bocanegra, the technical director of Atlanta United FC. He's got more insight here. Carlos, how's it going, man?
Good, guys. Thanks for having me.
No doubt. Of course, I'm sure you've been doing the rounds here with media after Tata Martino is hired as the first ever head coach in this club's history. I saw some photos on social media. We'll get to the nitty-gritty, but I have to ask you, after that intro press conference, I saw you guys at dinner. How much Malbec is being drank at that dinner? I mean, that seemed like a festive, fun atmosphere. You finally got your man.
No, it wasn't actually that much. I was It looked like a dinner spot, but it was a late lunch. It was right before we were off to CNN. So, it was a good time, and we're happy to have him on board. It's been a long process with the whole head coach process. And look, we're excited to have him on board. We're excited to get our guy and move forward. So, yeah, yesterday was a big celebration.
So we'll get to Tata, we'll get to that process, but I want to take you back before that because my understanding is that he made the call to you guys, but of course the coaching process, the search, it was going on, I have to assume, months and months before. So you get this job, you and Darren sit down, you're deciding what you want in a coach. Take me back to that time. What were your parameters? How big was the pool you were looking at? When did this process start? Basically, where were you the day before Tata calls?
Yeah, I mean, so Darren and him got in touch with a mutual friend, and so Tata's mutual friend reached out, and then it kind of took off from there, and it escalated very quickly. We hopped on a plane down to Rosario and spent some time with him down there. So, I mean, look, the whole process of the coaching process started, you know, I would say we kicked it into gear sort of in January, but before that, we'd been meeting with people, speaking with people, doing kind of just light interviews, so to speak. You know, we tried to speak to as many people as we could. We tried to speak to coaches with all different backgrounds, whether from MLS or from abroad, different countries. So we wanted to get a real wide range, a big perspective, and be able to make the right choice in the end. And we're very happy that we've come to Tata.
Let me take a guess. Was that mutual friend? Was his last name Pochettino?
I don't know. You'll have to ask Darren about that. I didn't really get into that too much with him, but it's
it was great. You know, we have had a lot of big managers around the world reach out, and it's really interesting, and I think it speaks volumes for MLS that coaches from around the world that have coached at very good clubs reach out and are interested in taking jobs in MLS. They see that the league is growing. They see it's a viable place for them to be, and it's a respectable league. So, you know, I remember 22 years ago when the league started, it was a different story. And now the times are changing and people are calling on us.
When you were getting those calls from big international coaches and when you were considering it, was there a worry? Was there an idea that you were going to go international, or were you looking more domestic? Did you have a short list the day before Tata called that you were kind of starting to zero in on?
Yeah, so it's a good question. Look, the funny thing about the world of soccer is it's all about timing, and things change so much. And it goes the same for players. You know, you can be looking at a player for up until the summer transfer window, and then he gets hot, and maybe he's unaffordable, or maybe he cools down and he's affordable. So it's the same with managers. They come available at different times. We always took the approach that we want to be open-minded and look around for everyone. So, like I said, we spoke to coaches here in America. We spoke to coaches abroad. The one thing that we always said was that if we did hire a foreign coach, that we would want someone with MLS experience on his staff that could have some influence. And so that will happen here with us. We've been speaking with Tata about that. That was before he was hired. That was one of the things that we discussed at length, and he's fantastic about it. The one thing that you guys will see, and as you get to know him better, he's very humble, and he's not threatened. He's confident in himself. So things like, you know, us wanting to have someone with MLS experience on his staff, he's very welcoming and thinks that's a great idea to help himself out and the staff and the club. And also things like, you know, he's wanting the academy coaches to come in and be a part of his session planning and sit in the room and discuss and talk football and all those good things. So he's very open-minded, very welcoming, and a very inclusive guy with a good character. So, you know, it kind of all aligned for us, and it was we're happy to have him.
Does he have any relationships with people that have worked in MLS? Is that someone that it's going to be someone that he knows and knows the league, or is it someone that you guys are going to help him go out and find?
He has a few. He's been up here a little bit, and obviously with Argentina last summer, they're here for the Copa America. So he knows a few people in and around. That's something we're going to be building and finalizing in the next few weeks with him. But yeah, obviously we have some people as well that we want to suggest to him. So, like I said, he's very open-minded and very, very willing, to participate and be a club guy.
Sounds kind of like a Rob Fartusian in New York City with Patrick Vieira. We'll wait and see what happens with that with Atlanta United. Carlos, take me into that meeting in Argentina. How prepared was he from a MLS knowledge perspective? What was that conversation like? You know, he calls, he has interest, you guys go down there. What's a meeting like that revolve around? What are the issues at stake? What's the conversation? What did you come away thinking from that?
Yeah, look, so it's interesting, right? You go down there not really knowing how interested he's going to be. Is it real? Is it, you know? But we said, all right, like, he reached out, we'll entertain it and head down there. So we go to this Argentinian steakhouse, and you know, which I think you guys have heard turned out to be the longest lunch in the history. But I mean, the amount of meat that was consumed at this thing was mind-boggling. But we're talking, and he comes out and brings this notebook out. You know, all the MLS teams, all the systems of play that he's seen them play in. You know, we focus a little bit more on the Eastern Conference teams, who he likes, what teams he likes, and why. You know, I've talked a little bit more about the West. And then, you know, he's very curious. He had read the rules, you know, kind of just on the MLS website, what you can gather from the rules and regulations within the league, spoken to a few people, but he was very prepared, very organized, and very intriguing, asking lots of questions that someone who hadn't done their homework would not be asking questions like that. So for me, that was a little bit of an eye-opener. And from that point on, I said, okay, this guy is serious about it. He cares. He's done a lot of homework on it. He's prepared. You know, we're talking about our team. If we had, you know, to play against, for example, the Red Bulls, what would we do? And, you know, getting the salt shakers out, the napkins, moving all the things around, and just talking tactics, and he's talking Bradley Wright Phillips, and so it was, that was really interesting, and it was actually great to see for us.
Just a side note, quick question. You go down there, does Darren Eel speak Spanish? Are you translating for him? Are you bringing someone along?
I think that's probably why it becomes a long meeting, because the translation process is in place. Now, Darren is not a great Spanish speaker. He's got a few words here and there. He's got French in his locker. It's through translation when we get into the details. But Tata's also got a low level of English that he's improving on, and he can talk about some stuff in English as well.
Now, we see players come over that take English classes. Is Tata going to take English classes? And I may be wrong here, but I think I read that his wife is an English teacher.
You are correct with that. So he will be getting it in the house until he comes up here in mid-October. And, we have a plan in place for him to be about 4 days a week. We'll have it at the office for the 3 months leading up to January, and obviously continue that beyond. But he probably has a little bit of a better grasp of the English language than people give him credit for. I think it's like with everybody, we get a little bit embarrassed when we go to foreign countries to speak the language. You know, we don't want to get laughed at.
We know for us, the next big moment for the team is October 16th. There's the coin flip and then the draft of the draft picks. And expansion draft coming up after that. Of course, you guys are looking at players all the time. What's the timeline for Tata to get here, to move to Atlanta, and how are you going to work with him until then?
Yeah, so he'll probably go home this weekend, stay down there for a few weeks, and look to come up in and around the coin flip. Obviously, we need to sort out the visas and all that stuff, so that will be a little bit of a factor in when he returns. But we're speaking about players. We're in contact. We're talking about different scenarios and options, and that's a discussion that will go on, be ongoing. He'll be looking to build his staff a little bit more, and we'll be looking to help and assist and place some people in there. So those are kind of the next discussions. And then, like I said, around, I don't know if he'll be up there for the coin flip or not, but in and around that time.
So you're talking about playing style, and I'm envisioning these napkins and these salt shakers and, players moving around on a steakhouse table in Rosario. You've talked from the beginning, Carlos, the whole organization, about wanting to play a proactive style, and that's no surprise from an expansion team. Every team around the world generally says that. Nobody says, well, we want to put 11 behind the ball and park the bus. What sort of style do you expect him to bring? What sort of style is he selling, or was that part of it? Or is he an adaptable guy that can go either way? Do you have an expectation of what your team will look like next March when they hit the field? Or I guess in February when preseason starts?
Yeah, we do. And look, I mean, you hit it right on the head, right? Everybody says, oh, we want to be a possession-based team and attacking and with flair. And look, that's really hard to accomplish from day one. So our biggest thing is we definitely want to be a team that's fast and fluid, high tempo when we can. You can't do it for 90 minutes every single game. We get that. If we're on the road, it might be a little different than when we're at home. But the biggest thing for us that we spoke about was when we come here, or when he comes here, it's the players that we're able to acquire is going to help dictate the system of play. And then in turn dictates a little bit of the style of play. So yes, we will be adaptive. We have some ideas in our heads of systems we'd like to play and players we'd like to acquire to put them in those systems. But within every league and every team, the players we're able to acquire is going to dictate a lot of the formation and the tactical adjustments that we'll have to use when we actually play.
That leads us right into your job. You and Paul McDonough, I expect, are leading this thing up, identifying players, figuring out how to get forward and get deals done with them. I mean, March is not that far away at this point. Tell us where you are in building a team. I mean, unlike Minnesota in some ways, you guys have signed a number of guys and managed to loan them out. You've got a DP in Hector Villalaba. Where do you stand right now? And on the flip side of that, you hire a guy like Tata Martino. My expectation, and correct if I'm wrong, is that this team is going to have a heavy South American and perhaps Central American influence. Would that be off?
So look, we're looking all around the world at the moment. I think South Americans tend to translate well to the league anyways. So that's natural. Tata's from there, so we'll see. He has a great knowledge of South America, coaching the Paraguayan national team and in Paraguay and in Argentina. He also has great contacts in Europe. So, as does Darren, Paul, myself. So we've got kind of a wide variety of what we're looking to do. And yes, so at the moment, Darren, Paul, myself, we've been in the room, targets on the board. And we put it a little bit on hold until Tata came because, you know, we had to acquire some players to get the thing going. And now we would like his input. And obviously, you know, like I said, we've just discussed systems of play or styles of play we'd like to try and achieve. So we all get in the room and we discuss players and, you know, okay, these are some targets we're looking at. Who have you thought about? X, Y, Z. And it's probably not too different than every other club around the country and every other club around the world where, you know, we try to mix it up and get the best of both worlds. But in the end, we have to get players that we feel will do well in MLS that translate well to this league and are going to be good for the club. For the long term.
We've talked a lot about this show, Carlos. Andres Guardado, I'm sure that's a name that you're familiar with, obviously from the region and your playing days as well, but he's been mooted a lot with Atlanta United, and that seems like one of those signings that would get people really, really excited as well, do a great job on the field for you. Is there interest in Andres Guardado? Are there conversations? Where do your final two DP spots stack up at this point?
Andrew, it's a good question. Like we get rumored with a lot of people, and you know, for us, our stance with the club is we're not really going to speak too much about players we're interested in or targeting. You know how it works with the discovery rules as well. It's just the guys that, you know, you ask about Guardado, you ask about, is he a good player? Yes, he's a great player, but you know, he's contracted with PSV. Excuse me, let me go back inside. Sorry, it's loud out there. We're just not going to discuss things like that, but we're looking all around the world. I'll tell you that.
The one DP you do have on your books, Hector Villalba, happens to be from Argentina, where you just picked up your manager. Did Tata Martino know about him before? Have you spoken to him? Obviously, you have spoken about him, about what type of impact he'll have.
Yes. So, in one of the first meetings, we spoke about Hector and his different qualities and what we feel he would bring to the league and. You know, how he would potentially fit into a style of play and a system of play that Tata was the manager, what he would do. And yes, he was very aware of him because Tata was also, before he left his post in Argentina, setting up the under-23 Olympic squad before the summer. So he's very aware of all the young players in that generation.
Let's talk a little bit about the academy before you get out of here. Tata has a reputation with that. I mean, he's going to be leading things up. It's nice to hear you say things like, hey, he wants to get the academy guys in the room as you plan training sessions. What's that kind of top-to-bottom approach look like? And it seems like you're making good progress on the academy front right now. Give us an update about where that is and how it'll fit into the first team once Martino gets there.
Yeah, no, it's good. Look, you know, one of the important things was that he's interested in the youth and helping develop as a club. We're not necessarily going to be doing a 4-4-2 from under-12s up to the first team. We just can't do that because, you know, types of players, different styles, different personnel that come in. But what we do want is his influence overseeing the youth, his input, because they need to learn different systems. They need to learn different styles of play. But what would be great is with like the 16s and 18s, you know, him or his assistant coaches are going to be able to get out there and on the field with these kids before January because we don't have a first team. And he'll be able to run some training sessions with them and implement his ideas. So when we are able to pull up some of our youngsters into the first team training, it's not a big shock. They know what to expect. They know his style of play. They know what you know, his expectations are for a training session. And then hopefully we can get some of these guys involved in the first team the first year.
Speaking of academy, did I read right that you had 1,000 supporters at an academy game recently?
Yeah, it was great. We had our first home game for the 16s and 18s at, you know, at the academy fields. They're only our temporary fields right now because our training ground won't be ready for the academy until January. But it was really cool. We had, you know, supporter section out there with the drums, the band, whole setup. The club did a really good job of making it a nice event. And then the people are just excited in Atlanta for soccer. And we don't have a first team right now, so our under-18s and 16s are the closest thing they get to the professional team. But it's amazing going against the college football on a Saturday and all the other sports and whatnot people do on the weekends with their kids. They have over 1,000 people there.
Outside of the stuff on the field and, of course, the excitement with Tata and players, how do you feel the clubs coming together and the relationship with the city so far?
It's been great. You know, the support behind us, I think we're over 22,000 season tickets already. Just the excitement, the media coverage. You know, we're starting to see T-shirts, Atlanta United T-shirts around town. You know, the marketing department and the club did a great kind of outreach with the Flag Friday. And so, you know, you see flags flying every once in a while and restaurants having things up like that on the wall. So people are really pumped up about it. And, you know, soccer is a global game. So Atlanta is a town of transplants that move there and live there now, right? So people come with from all over the place, not only within America, but outside the country, and they're pumped for soccer in the Southeast, so it's been great.
Do you pinch yourself every now and then, Carlos? I mean, you're playing, and then you're in this position where, honestly, it's a once-in-a-lifetime thing. I mean, it's kind of the stuff of dreams, to be able to build a club like this from scratch and have that amount of support, and then to go get Tata and to get an internationally renowned manager, and, you know, you've got the support of Arthur Blank and everybody else behind you. Are there times, and I'm sure you're working like a dog, are there times where you just kind of think to yourself, man, how did I get in this position? I am so fortunate.
Yeah, no, honestly, when I was looking post-career to start the next process, it was something that I thought about. I said, look, being able to start a franchise is a once-in-a-lifetime opportunity, and it's been so much fun. It's been a lot of hard work and keeping us very busy, but you know what, you mentioned it, with from Arthur, top-down, great ownership. He gets it. He's been in sports. He likes the startup business. Obviously, he did Home Depot, you know, however many years ago as a startup. So this kind of excites him. But, you know, him bringing in Darren with the leadership team and the support we get just from the staff above, I mean, it's been a great platform, great learning experience, and just kind of everybody involved that we've been hiring with the club. It's growing and growing, and I think putting more good people and hard workers in place. It's been really exciting and fun to be a part of.
We're pumped for next year, of course. Before we let you go, give me one thing you've learned or one moment where you kind of stepped back and said, whoa, that's different. I'm going to have to change the way I think about things. What's kind of come out for you and shaped what you're going to be in the future?
Yeah, no, and I'm not sure if it was one thing I learned from, but it was – I didn't realize the magnitude of a head coaching search, the time consumption, you know, looking references, due diligence process, you know, literally just the amount of time spent throughout this whole process. I didn't realize it would be this in depth, but it's been a fascinating process, and I've learned a lot, definitely, but it's opened my eyes just to how important it is to try and go out there and get the right guy by putting it the time ahead.
They got their man, Gerardo Tata Martino, the head coach, the first ever head coach of Atlanta United FC. Technical director Carlos Bocanegra sharing his thoughts. Carlos, we thank you for your time, man. Good luck going forward. I'm sure you got a busy winter ahead.
Oh, thanks. Thanks, Andrew. Thanks for having me on, and I'll see you guys soon.
Big thanks to Carlos Bocanegra for joining us here. He wiggled out of that Andres Guardado question very, very well. That's not the first time he's done that, I'm sure. But when you listen to him talk about what Tata will do and what they will do as an organization, it's hard not to get a little bit excited. Of course, executing that is a little bit different. One guy we did not talk about was Andrew Carleton, the teenage attacking midfielder who a lot of folks out there are really excited about, starting to get his feet wet professionally with the Charleston Battery. Matt, this is kind of the beginning of things. That's the academy side. We argued a little bit about that before we get on here. Your thoughts on Andrew Carleton and the future of that franchise? Not in the first thing, because we know they'll have money, but on the development side.
I think coaches in MLS are getting more and more often, they're getting judged on how they do with that development side and if they are willing to play the young guys. And look, Andrew Carleton is probably the most talented kid in the year 2000 player pool, birth year 2000 player pool for the U.S. And he has not looked out of place for a second so far in those USL games. I hope he gets his chance under Tata Martino, and I hope he takes it, because this is a kid who, if you talk to people around U.S. soccer, they are not hesitant to compare him to Christian Pulisic.
I just want to add one thing under Tata. Yeah, he's a great coach. He's done a lot of things as a manager, but he's a very, very good player as well, an attacking midfielder. So that might be a decent guy for Andrew Carleton to come up underneath. Atlanta United FC fans, let us know what you think. Anybody in MLS, is this a shot to the bow of your team's ambition as well? At Extra Time Radio, extratime at MLSsoccer.com. We come back right into the mailbag, and we will talk about another expansion team's coaching options when we get there.
Fans, we want to hear from you. You're encouraged to email extratime at MLSsoccer.com or tweet at extratime radio with any comments, questions, or reactions.
Back now, Extra Time Radio. I am Andrew Wiebe. David Goss is with me, along with Matt Doyle, the armchair analyst. You know him well. And he's going to be gone. That's what I heard. I heard he's going on a little bit of a Wiebe vacay. No? Is that the deal, Matt? We're going to lose you for next couple shows?
Yeah, for a week and a half. I think the next three shows. I am not going to altitude, though. I know you like to go do cardio training every time you go on vacation, but I'm going to stay at sea level.
Yeah, I do like that. I just run up and down mountains for fun and collapse at the bottom. What?
I'm going to be gone next week for one, so
really?
Shinato Vata,
oh,
any of our
man.
Jewish
listeners. Oh, man, we got a little bit of a scramble going on. We'll bring in Ben the Research Bear. We have been getting a lot of requests.
I don't think you will.
We won't?
Yeah,
he's
I don't
also,
think you'll be bringing
he's also
there.
Happy New Year.
Oh, I thought it was because we burned him just in the first segment.
That might be potential
as
well.
Well, we'll get Ariel Castillo in here, maybe a little Kalen Carr. We've had a ton of requests. I mean, just inundated by these requests for Simon Borg to come back.
Yeah, of course.
And every time I ask him, he just either ignores me, which is generally what happens when I ask him things, or he laughs.
Well, the reality of life and humanity is that things always seem better in the past, right?
Right.
The good old days.
Mm-hmm.
Like, everyone thinks the good old days.
I think there's a very common
Simon.
Idiom there.
He would be a good veteran signing for the stretch run.
You think so? What would we have to offer him, though? Like, do we have the cap space? Do we have the tan? Do we have the game?
I mean, we could pay him in jam.
No!
Oh, man.
Matt Doyle breaks.
Up. I set you up, and I didn't know it.
Matt Doyle breaks
yes.
Extra Time Radio.
We could pay him in jam. We may have to extend that offer. That could be some
–
you know what?
Down.
I am going to extend that offer. Next Monday, I'm going to do my best to get Simon Borg on the show. And if I fail
– sounds like we're going preserve shopping this week.
Yes. Yes, we are. Let's jump into the mailbag.
Wait, before we go there, Christian Pulisic.
Yeah,
Champions League helps sets up the tying goal against Real Madrid.
Did they
at
count
home?
This as an assist?
I don't
didn't check
think
the box
so.
Score because there was a deflection there.
Yeah, I don't think he got an official assist, but he helped set it up. He looked great when he came on.
He did against Real Madrid.
Yeah, dribbling by guys. The whole team actually looked really good. Dortmund did, but he played really well. And then I have a question.
Yes,
the name of this show is Extra Time Radio.
That's correct.
Our little logo says 90001, right?
Yeah, I think so.
01.
Yeah.
What does the name of this show have to do with? Is it stoppage time or is it the extra period after you finish regulation?
Because it's the extra period after regulation.
Right. It's not stoppage time. Because
it's not stoppage time.
Right.
Okay.
So there's. I think it's the concept being that there's the game. And we all watch the game. You know, we'll jump on MLS Live. Nice little plug there. You like that? And then after
only
the game.
Only 1999 for the rest of the season.
Yes, that's correct. Well done. And then after that, we discuss it in extra time with a capital T and the two words slammed together.
So this show only occurs in a knockout format is what you're telling
me. Yeah, no, I think that's a good way of putting it.
Okay. Uh-huh. I just didn't know that.
The stakes are highest when we record.
That's good to know. Now let's jump into the mailbag.
Mm-hmm.
Amanda in Orange County. Grant Wall is reporting that LAFC have significant interest in Bob Bradley. Wall says on Twitter, that means they've been in contact about being their head coach. What do you guys think? Would Bob be the right choice? So let's
Bob
start.
The builder?
Let's start here. Doyle, would Bob Bradley be the right choice? And then let's go to whether we think it's likely that he'd take it.
I think any MLS team, especially one starting basically from scratch, would be lucky to have Bob Bradley. And I'd be shocked if he wasn't a success again, as he has been two times in the past in this league. As for whether or not I think he'd take it, I'm sure he's open to it. And look, for everybody in the world, money talks. If the offer is right, you listen. But I also think that he's very ambitious and he wants to break through and become that first U.S. manager to do it in one of the top leagues in the world. And I mean, he's got an interview with Swansea City and they're in the Premier League this week. you know, when you're getting interviews like that, we don't traditionally see managers in that position come to MLS.
Also, Swansea City, if we're making connections there, I mean, that's Landon Donovan. Doesn't he have a little bit of stake in that one? I mean, there are some connections. We'll see what happens. They still have a head coach, by the way. They haven't fired the guy who's in charge. So we'll see what happens with him. I do think LAFC would be, as we heard Carlos Bocanegra say, I mean, and Tata Martino is in the same boat. It's an intriguing opportunity because you get to build from the ground up. And let's be honest, LA, like Dallas, like New York, one of the best places in the country to develop talent.
Yeah.
So if you're trying to build a holistic club approach and you get to come in and have a quote-unquote blank slate on that side and the resources and the downtown stadium and the ownership group that has all these kind of bright lights and bright names and the possibility of getting some really, really big-name players, I could certainly see how that would stand out and be something that Bob would be interested in. But at the same time, Matt's right. He has kind of a stated goal. He wants to be this guy that breaks down some doors.
And for Tata Martino, the opportunity to build a club is something unique because he grew up in a soccer environment where clubs don't pop up. Bob Bradley's already coached two expansion teams. So he's been there before. I agree with you that there's the potential that LAFC could be bigger than anything else he's been a part of, with Chicago and obviously Chivas. But I think he's already kind of had that opportunity. It's a different – I think he would see that opportunity.
But MLS
different is
in a different place than it was at those times, right?
Maybe.
It's in a different place. We'll see what happens, but it is intriguing. It is fun to think about Bob Bradley. What will he do? I think currently in the second division in France, his team's mid-table right now, but there are so many games. Things can switch at any given time. Almost got to the first division last year, just didn't quite get it done. So.
Let's talk a little Seattle, though, because you can't talk MLS and not talk Seattle. Jeff from Seattle said, hey, guys, Seattle has not gone above the red line at any point this year. If they do, it'll be very late in the season. This is from Monday. So now they are above the red line. Would this be a record, or has this happened before? Any great tales of teams making a late push?
Man.
Now, Doyle, this to me is the ultimate Seattle invented soccer email, because MLS is a league of late pushes. And to say, is this the first time a team's made a late push to get in the playoffs, to me is quite hilarious.
I mean, yeah, especially because DC United are doing the exact same thing in the Eastern Conference.
And I'm pretty sure Portland won MLS Cup last year, and they were sitting outside
the red line. Were they? Wait, how late was Portland below the red line?
I can't remember the exact date.
I think it was beginning of September, so maybe it wasn't quite as late as it was for Seattle, but I'm sure that there have been some late pushes to make the playoffs in years past.
By the way, I'm
blanking
on
him right now.
I don't know the exact date, but Red Bulls, when they went to MLS Cup in 2008, were the last seed into
the Western Conference.
Yeah, I can't imagine that they clinched that early.
We'll do
on.
Some research on this and come back to you on Monday. Or I guess I will. I'll be the one that comes back to you with all the answers here. Maybe Ben,
yeah,
the
I'm
research
not,
bear.
I'm not coming back on Monday.
Yeah, he can fill in the blanks for us here. We got anything else? Or
yeah,
we close
last
this bad
one.
Boy down?
Like we said, RSL, please have Plata, Yura, and Burrito on. Honestly, if they were scoring, then I don't have to keep holding my breath every time Beckerman takes a strike from outside the box that he always seems to put just tantalizingly close enough, but over the goal.
Yeah, he is always wide. Didn't we have a Drogba email? I thought I teased that here.
We did have a Drogba email. He got into a little bit of a...
It's a Modge Podge?
No. He got into a little bit of an argument at Red Bull Arena with two fans as he went down the hallway last Saturday in their 1-0 loss. And so Shin Kicker online wanted to know what we thought about it.
Don't really care. No big deal. Things happen. People have little dust-ups, and that sometimes makes the game fun. But Didier, man, they need him on form if they want to.
Do they need him on form, Doyle? Because Didier Drogba once again does not start, and Montreal gets a win, and Dominic Odero scores. Do they need Drogba on form, or is it the exact opposite? They need to not play him.
Or just
they need to bring him off the bench. I think that he can be a 30-minute, you know, a real asset in that situation. But look, the second goal that Montreal scored in that game is a perfect example of the type of goal that you can't score if Didier Drogba's on the field, because he doesn't play any defense anymore. He allows you to just bypass him and set up shop in the midfield, and you can't really play like that if you have a midfield that doesn't cover a ton of ground, and that is Montreal to a T. So I think you start Mancosu, And then, you know, at the 60-minute, 65-minute mark, you do an assessment and you say, all right, we're gonna bring in Drogba for him. Maybe we go to a 4-4-2. Maybe we go to a 4-5-1. But you can switch it up a little bit. And it's a big test for Mauro Biello because he's a young coach and he's had some ups and downs. And it's tough to bench a DP. But I think Didier Drogba needs to be benched. And then I want to go back to the 2008 season real quick. I just looked it up. New York Red Bulls went 2-5-1 in their last eight. So they didn't make
They went from above to bottom.
To bottom, yeah. They limped into the playoffs. It was actually Kansas City that year who won five of their last seven. They went 5-1-1 and jumped into like the second to last spot.
You know who would have been covering that Kansas City team?
Andrew Wiebe and Kerry Zavagnin.
Yeah, boy. Yeah, that would have been me. I didn't remember that one.
Sasha Victorine and Scott Seeley.
That's all we have for today. Big thanks to Carlos Bocanegra for joining us. Thanks to you for listening. You can hit us up at Extra Time Radio, extratimeatmlssoccer.com. I will see you on Monday.
You're listening to Extra Time Radio.